piece that was passed last year. And what MMA appears to say is that there's a second piece that includes our being able to tax the equipment, not just the poles and the wires, and that that would yield $25 million to all the cities and towns. I mean, it's not big money, but it's money. And basically, I think it should be passed. I think it's the existing law serves no legitimate public purpose, and we need all the money we can get legitimately. And I hope that the senator and is she chairman of judiciary or
yes.
She's still revenue?
Oh, judiciary.
No, too bad. Well, I'm sure she contributes mightily there as well. But the tax when she was chairman of taxation, she was able to push at least the first part. And well, basically, I just hope that it's on their radar screens. And I was a little taken aback at the party for Alderman Balzer, Representative Balzer, where she cited her priorities for the upcoming year, and none of them were the MMA stuff, so I had the uneasy feeling that perhaps they all forgot. And I think we, basically, what I would hope is that our senator and all our reps, every time they get to see the leaders of their house, to be able to say, this is one of my priorities. My city and towns are desperate, and this isn't really hurting anybody who can't take it, so do it. I would suggest that hold is the appropriate thing here so that we can get the other legislators and their staffs in. But just maybe if this gentleman could give us an update on where that item is now. I think it used to be a piece of the Governor's Municipal Partnership Act. I'm not sure what's become of it. I think it passed, at least the first piece passed ultimately as part of, as an outside section of one or the other of the budgets. So I'm not sure where any of the stuff is, but I know it hasn't passed. And if MMA is still saying that it's important and it doesn't appear, I mean, charter school doesn't really matter to us. The other stuff might, but these two in particular struck me that there was no downside to asking our members and the MMA themselves to push as hard as they could, as cry as loud as all the other lobbying groups up in the State House. So at least get a piece of the pie.
Well, we are filling my secretary's office. Michael, if you want
to sure.
Anything.
Sure.
Start off by, of course, introducing yourself into the record, and then we'll pick it up.
Okay. I'm Mike Abitur from Senator Cynthia Graham's office.
Formerly a board senator?
Sorry?
Never mind. Formerly a board senator.
Formerly, yeah, unfortunately. Mm. No longer. No longer a Newton resident, I have to admit. But I very much appreciate the opportunity to speak, and you're giving me the chance to speak on these two important issues. I assure you, people on the Hill haven't forgotten about these issues, and to the extent that anyone has, I'm sure they'll be reminded as the budget cycle heats up in the next weeks and months. I hope I'm not revisiting ancient history, just to go back to before the ruling that you talked about.
Our ruling.
Well, there were a couple of rulings.
Well, yeah, but we like to claim credit for that. It was ours.
So the Appellate Tax Board, as you mentioned, ruled that as far as the centrally valued poles and wires on public lands are concerned, that they should not be exempt, those owned by telecom companies, from the personal property tax. And for a while there, it was unclear whether that was going to be reversed on appeal. And in the meantime, DOR suggested that, or required, I guess, that municipalities keep any revenues that they got through that means in an overlay account. Senator Green, as well as some other legislators, put forward an amendment before this year's budget to a different bill to codify that. They were unable to convince the full Senate at that time to enact that codification of the ruling, but as a compromise, there was a municipal relief commission that was established that Senator Green served on, and that Senator Rosenberg was the Senate chair of. They put forward a package of recommendations, not only on the two issues that you brought up, mm-hmm. but on a host of other issues related to municipal finances. They put out their final report just under a year ago, I think.
Has any of it passed?
Sorry?
Has any of it passed?
Virtually all of it was included in the Senate budget. However, that passed last spring.
Mm-hmm.
However, the House balked.
So we got the wrong here.
I can't speak for the House leadership. Yeah. Senator Green wasn't in on that conference committee, but what came out was a budget for fiscal year 2010 that included the poles and wires, basically the codification and clarification of the appellate tax board ruling. In preparation for the meeting, I talked to somebody from DOR who calculated that it's bringing in $718,000 to Newton for this year.
Good. Good start.
Yes. The commission did talk about what MMA is referring to there on equipment like switches and signals, and the commission couldn't reach consensus on including that in the package. So that is still out there. My understanding is that there was an argument that in the same way that the initial idea of the exemption for the poles and wires in the early 1900s was to encourage telecom companies to bring service throughout the state, that to tax the signals and the switches would be a disincentive for future expansions of wireless networks in ways both foreseeable now and still unforeseeable. I don't personally have the expertise to know how valid that is, but in the end, what came out of the commission was only the poles and wires, and the switches and signals are still out there. I know Boston has been pushing hard for that as well, leading the charge.
Are we in on the charge?
You are now.
Okay.
I don't know that we've heard from Newton on that particular issue, at least since last year's budget go-around. But this is something that I imagine will be brought up again in the context of the FY11 budget, yeah, mm-hmm. which, as I say, is about to legislature is about to begin discussions on.
Okay.
So
is it on Cindy's list?
It is now.
Okay, good.
I'll make sure to talk to her about, you know, the concerns raised here, and good. You know, already, you know, in preparation for this,
mm-hmm.
We've been talking about it. And I didn't apologize for Senator Cream not being here. She had a couple of other events planned before we were contacted about this for tonight. But
Martha Coakley's victory party.
I wish. I guess that's where we stand on the telecom issue.
Okay.
It's kind of a mixed bag at this point. I admit that with the poles and wires included, but not yet the switches.
So what's your preference?
I would say hold it and let's get the other people in the other house. Make sure that it's on all their lists too, and. Somebody who once wanted to be a member of this august board is the chief of staff for the Speaker of the House. I don't know whether he... Chuck Eisenberg's son, Jim.
Oh, Jim.
Oh, I know.
So he doesn't live in the city anymore.
At least knows the zip code.
He does. It's my zip code. So I think it would be nice to, I don't know, invite him, but at least get our guys to come in and get them to pledge their undying loyalty and fealty to our financial interests.
Well, do we need to get them to come in to do that, or is it...
I think it's salutary for their... If they're willing to send a letter to be shared with every member of the board that, yes, when the speaker is asking me for my items that I would like included in the budget, that I will include improvements to the telecom stuff for the cities and towns, and will include the ability of the cities and towns to set their own health costs on the same basis that the state does. If they're willing to put that in writing without coming in, swell. But following that, I won't see them here.
Okay. But may I make a suggestion, Mr. Chairman?
Yes, I'll.
Just in the interest of everybody's time, if Alderman Yates' suggestion can be carried through the committee clerk to our reps, and just see if they're willing to make that representation, it will save time.
Sure.
If not, then they can come in and tell us about it. Is mm-hmm. that correct?
Yeah, and just to make it explain what I'm talking about, on the health insurance thing, I put it in the way it was being touted to the first part of joining the group insurance commission. Since then, and I think the CAG looked at this too, that it's not clear that the group insurance commission actually does better than we do in terms of holding down the costs. That I think we've had a decent track record in negotiating with the insurance providers, but we are still, as the first item one in the MMA handout points out, is that what they proposed to give us more authority basically didn't. The state negotiates their health care costs a different way, and it's exempt from collective bargaining. They did give us, which I think was just a laughable thing, that, you can have, you can join the group insurance commission if a supermajority of your union employees approve that, which certainly under the last administration wasn't going to happen in this city. And it's just, I find the general court is delinquent in doing stuff that doesn't cost them any money, but would at least give us a little bit of relief. And I'm astonished that they listened to the ludicrous arguments made against both of these items. I can understand they haven't got the money to give. Well, okay. Turn us loose. Give us a little more power. And I think we should continually hold our members' feet to the fire. I mean, they're all my friends. I love them all dearly. But everybody needs to be reminded about stuff. If emails and phone calls had not deluged us last night, before last night, we might have had a very different meeting. That our brothers and sisters at the higher levels of government are the same as us, in that when people keep calling them and writing them and banging their heads, they're more likely to respond. That's just human nature. So I think we need to, I would say, hold this, do what Alderman Baker said, and asked the committee clerk to seek written commitments from the members of the House on these issues, and particularly, they're more important, at least time-wise, that the House budget is made up before the Senate budget is made up. And I don't know what the administration plans to do, but maybe Mr. Rooney can enlighten us on what the administration's role will be in the MMA and all of the related stuff.
He can do it now. He's disappeared.
Oh, did he leave? Oh, I just thought he was behind me.
But I would move forward on both items in light of what Alderman
Yates said. Let me first read the second item into the record for a moment. Sure. Docket item 83-07, Alderman Yates requesting that the City of Newton take all possible steps to persuade the General Court to adopt the proportion of governance.
Proportion.
Well, it says proportion, but I think it's...
Well, it's a typo.
Okay.
On my part, not the clerk's.
To adopt the proportion of the Governor's Municipal Partnership Act, I think, that would
yes.
allow the city to reduce employee health insurance costs by joining the Group Insurance Commission. There is a motion...
to hold that.
By Alderman Yates, to hold both that item and the docket item A2-07 with the further instruction that the clerk's office generate a letter to our members of the General Court, and then we would also take the opportunity to hear from the administration, executive office here about mm-hmm. their plans as well. Alderman Hesman.
I was just trying to pull up a document that I had discussed with Sandy Pooler back in December, I think it was, or November. Several different options in comparing GIC versus alternative health plan options. And I know that, because I talked to Bob about it very briefly, but I know that they have a binder full mm-hmm. of stuff.
Good.
So, okay.
Now, if they only take their stuff and push it through all the channels that they got.
We're going to, since they're related items, if it's okay with the committee, we'll put them together. There's a motion for hold on both. Is there any further discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor of the motion to hold, this will be on both items, 82-07 and 83-07, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, in favor.
Do I have to go back to traffic calming now?
Oh, none opposed, no abstentions, and two members not present.
Oh, crap.
We're
not going to talk about traffic and agitation if you want to stop.
Why are you talking about traffic at all?
Texting while driving.
Thank you for coming.
Yeah. Oh, that.
Thank you.
Why is that before this committee?
It's before both committees.
Well, why this one?
Because it's home rule legislation and has to
come. Oh, yeah. Okay, got it. I understand.
That brings us to our final item for the evening, Docket Item 20-010, Alderman Hesman-Hann and Harney requesting special legislation prohibiting the use of cannabis.
I'm just going to...
And a demonstration by all
there's got to be a limit on texting while legislating.
I know for a fact he was using his handheld.
Never mind.
Yesterday. All right. Handheld mobile device to send, read, or receive electronic messages while operating a motor vehicle within the city of Newton. And in order to protect its citizens and to limit unnecessary motor vehicle accidents, injuries, and fatalities, and that the appropriate committees conduct a public hearing to examine the feasibility thereof. Alderman Hesman-Hann, the docket, and is present, and I think is going to talk about the desirability for a public hearing.
Yeah. Well, a couple things. In between the time that put the Friday packet together and today, actually Jay Ciccone was able to get a hold of the special legislation and also the statewide legislation that Peter Katugin, our state rep, had filed. Which is similar, although not identical, which prohibits texting while driving, but would count as a secondary rather than as primary offense. In other words, if you were stopped for something else and also were texting, you'd be fined for that as a secondary offense, which differs from the version that Boston is seeking to do. Boston's effort arose... two ways. Partly it was John Tobin, who's the city council from Boston, that brought it up in the first place. He sort of ran with it after seeing and meeting parents of a child who was killed by a driver who was texting while driving. And he also coordinated with the AAA, which is very much in favor of this, as well as Safe Roads Alliance, which is a Massachusetts group, which, as the name suggests, has a mission to improve the safety of roads. And a number of organizations that support it out of state, a number of police organizations and so forth. In the materials that I provided to you, you can see there are any number of studies that are actually rather recent, most of the studies in the past had sort of dwelled on the safety of using a cell phone and the difference between hands-free model or not. Just so you know, it doesn't really make any difference whether you use the hands-free or not. You're still a menace if you talk while you're driving. Apparently, it's kind of like chewing gum and walking straight. It just can't be done. But in terms of the texting, they've done some very recent natural studies. In other words, actually put cameras in cars and trucks while people were driving and doing what they do while they're driving. And it's the National Transportation Safety, NHTSA, National Highway Transportation Safety Administration, Ray LaHood is also very interested in this, and he actually had a conference on distracted driving and has issued a number of statements advocating for, among other things, laws prohibiting texting while driving. There are any number of reasons why it's so unsafe, but I think the studies from the Virginia Tech Transportation Institute and from the Utah University of Utah, showing that, and again, these were natural studies as well as simulator studies. But I actually watched people and saw how much more dangerous it was when they were texting. It was, in truck drivers, it's 23 times more dangerous when you're texting than when you're not. And with using a simulator with just a regular driving, it's 6 times more dangerous. You're 6 times more likely to be involved in a crash. What got the AAA so interested in this was some studies that they did on teenagers who are the major users of texting devices, both cell phones and smartphones or other gadgets. About 50% of teenagers admit at least once either driving while texting or being in the car as an occupant with a teenager who's driving while texting. If that doesn't scare the living bejesus out of you, I don't know what does. I have a daughter who's 18, who's about to get her license. I worry less about her texting while driving than I do about her being in a car with another teenager who's texting while driving. Mm-hmm. Peter Katusian, as I said, has filed legislation that would make it a secondary offense. The point of doing this as special legislation is twofold. Number one would be, in order to do this, we would need special legislation to allow us to impose a fine specifically for texting while driving in the city limits. Boston is seeking the same relief. But the real overarching purpose is to get the legislature to actually pass some legislation on this. I wish we kept, who's here? Michael from Senator Cream's office. Actually, the Senate had passed as part of a rider to the budget, had passed a ban, but it ultimately did not get passed in the final version. There have been several attempts, but as with the seatbelt use, it's taken a long time to get anything accomplished. The AAA and Safe Roads Alliance and Boston and a few other cities and towns that I've spoken with are interested in a coordinated policy, or coordinated strategy, of cities and towns basically saying, we want this, sending a message to their legislators that they're not afraid to support it, and hopefully giving legislators the kind of support that they need. I know this, and I just can't remember the gentleman's name who proposed the Senate bill. It's just blown out of my head. That's the Boston Home Rule Legislation. But you did get, I hope you did get copies tonight in your pile of things that Karen gave you that includes the bill introduced by Petrocelli is the Home Rule Legislation from Boston, which outlines the language that we're looking at. I did not see it until this afternoon because it wasn't previously available online. I guess just today I filed. But it lays out pretty clearly what a mobile communications device is, mobile phone, mobile communications device, what is being banned. And if you look through the materials, you'll see there are some differences between the two bills. These are both pretty straightforward, pretty plainly written bills, which explain exactly what is being described here, under what circumstances it can be enforced or not, and so forth. The final thing I'll just add, and let Jay jump in, anything he has to add. If you look through the materials, I also provided some information on what other states are doing. This was downloaded before New Hampshire became, I think, the 20th state to ban texting while driving. And New Hampshire, as you may know, has the motto of live free or die, but apparently they're not going to let you die while you're texting while driving. But if you look, you'll see that there are a rather large number of states that either ban texting while driving outright, or ban it for junior operators, or ban some combination of cell phone use and texting. So with that, if you have any other questions, I'm happy to answer them. But give Jay a chance to weigh in.
I'm sorry, Jay wants to say something. I'll wait until he's...
No, I just, I thought of this about 6 months ago. One of my younger nieces, who's in her 20s, had one of a good friend of hers was killed in a car accident. And although it didn't make headlines and there were no charges brought, they all knew that she was texting while she was driving and went off the road and was killed. And she was always texting when she was driving, and to the point where my niece never felt comfortable driving with her and wouldn't drive with her. So seeing all, as Ted said, the statistics are just phenomenal. And so that got me thinking, and then, I drive Route 128 every day. I work in Braintree, so I go on 128 every single day. And I can't tell you the number of times that I've been driving in the morning traffic, and I've had to put my brake on. And I see the people sitting there, and next thing you know, they're swerving into my lane, they're going back again, and they're sitting there, and they're either, it's beyond belief, it's just amazing that more people haven't been killed, and this hasn't been brought to the forefront, because it is just incredibly dangerous, and locally in Newton, who hasn't, driven through Newton Center, and you've got somebody pulling out of the parking lot in an SUV, and the first thing they do is they're not looking at whether it's safe to pull out, they're on their phone. It's just so. And when I saw the city of Boston doing this, I had the same thought, and then I found out Ted was doing this, and I just said, I will support this 100%. And it's, my only question is, in the definition of this legislation that's been filed. To me, I'm concerned about emailing on BlackBerrys as well as texting, and it looked like the city of Boston.
That's just their resolution.
The
special legislation, I think, actually.
The special legislation that I looked at talked about. Whoever sends, reads, or writes a text message. Now, does text message encompass emails through a BlackBerry?
There's actually, if you look at Peter Katuchin's,
I would want that to be included, obviously, because that, I think with the young kids, it's texting, but with older people, it's everybody's conducting their business on their BlackBerry, and I'm guilty sometimes too. So
the interesting thing about it is whether you're texting or emailing, Jay points out exactly right, that the testing, the research that's been done shows that a couple things happen. Number one is your reaction time goes way up. It takes a lot longer to react to emergencies in front of you because of the distraction from doing texting or emailing. Secondly, it causes you to drift from one lane to another. And they see this throughout the research, is that these are the two things that happen the most. And then, obviously, the reaction time being slower, people are having, and swerving is what is causing the mostly fatal accidents. And it isn't always the person who's actually driving that's involved in the accident. There was one other thing, and John Tobin, when I spoke to him on the phone, actually sent me the link to the YouTube video. It was a police department in Wales had done a PSA, the public service announcement video, that's gotten a lot of attention. It is pretty gruesome, but it's actually based on exactly what kinds of accidents happen when you're texting. It shows, it's a bunch of drama students from the local high school who got together to do this as volunteers, and they filmed this. There's CGI involved, so they didn't actually have an actual accident, but they show what happens in an accident, and the driver is actually texting and swerves into oncoming traffic, and you see all the sorts of things that the research says is exactly what happens when someone's texting while driving. It isn't like being on a phone, and a lot of people ask me, well, why don't you ban cell phone use? Also, two reasons. Number one, even harder to get people to comply. In states where they've looked at it, initially in New York, they banned it, and you know, people just sneaking it or headed down here. The hands-free, as I said, doesn't make any difference whether you're hands-free or talking on the cell phone, holding it, it's the same accident rate. It really doesn't make a difference. But there's a qualitative and quantitative difference with the texting because of, you know, people are not only distracted by receiving information, but then also sending information at the same time. Their hands aren't free, and they're also, you know, their eyes are not on the road for an extended period of time. So it's just like the perfect storm of things all happening together.
So it's interesting talking about New York, but it doesn't matter. But why wouldn't we, if we're going to hold a public hearing, which I think is what your item is, why wouldn't we hold a public hearing on both items?
Meaning what?
In other words, banning handheld as well as text. And I saw the Boston one. With Boston one was limited to junior drivers, right?
No. Peter Petuchin's version is not limited to junior drivers. There are two different sections.
By the way, that's the premarital text.
It is. Oh my.
There's one
section that deals with junior operators because it's a different chapter.
The
next one deals with all drivers.
But that's mobile
yeah.
phones, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah, right. But I think it's everything actually.
It's everything, right?
I mean, ideally, love to do it. One of the difficulties is Massachusetts has the legislature has at least once passed a version of a texting ban while. Cell phones, they just don't seem to even want to touch it.
So when Brookline did it on their own, they got their hands, right?
It would be very hard to get special legislation passed just with cell phones. And I'm just being realistic.
Yeah.
And the amount of time and effort that goes into it. But I mean, again, Ray Hood, who's the director of NHTSA, talked about all sorts of distracted driving, but texting while driving in particular. And again, a lot of it is the focus is on teenagers, who, as Jay suggests, these kids seem to spend an awful lot of time texting.
Isn't the way your item is worded, could it include both? Because it talks about handheld devices.
Yeah. So if you're doing a BlackBerry,
isn't
that
wrong?
To
address
Mitchell. Oh, I'm sorry. I
hold the public hearing.
Yeah.
On this item, it could in theory encompass.
It would be texting or BlackBerry. Yeah, it would be any.
The texting BlackBerry is a Verizon handheld.
Yeah, yeah. But what I'm talking about is strictly on texting rather than talking on a cell phone.
Now, I'm sorry. How does public safety discern between someone texting and now everything's touchscreen about someone going through and typing a phone number going back and forth? So in other words. It's not a simple process of whether someone's clicking away and just calling a phone number versus sending an email.
You can defend yourself by saying that I was just doing. I've been to traffic court to represent people, or I've been in court when they have the traffic hearings. The defense generally is I was just on my cell phone. You will note, however, that when you're brought in, generally the ticket's going to say two things. It's going to be reckless driving, and it's going to be, right now there's no ban on actually doing that. But if someone's driving recklessly, they'll get them for that as well. But strictly speaking, I'm not quite sure what the answer to that is. If your defense is, I was only taking my hands off the road and driving all over the place because I was, playing with an app and I wasn't really texting, good luck to you. I found that the judges are not real receptive to that. I will tell you that I was in court very recently when a judge took up a case of a fellow who was on 93 and who was driving up 93 and was pulled over for talking on the phone. And he took umbrage because nobody else was, you know, getting pulled over. And he said literally everybody on 93 was talking on their phone while they were driving. And so the judge turned to the police officer and said, well, you know, why was it you pulled this guy over, not everybody else? He says, well, he was the only one that was cutting across three lanes of traffic back and forth. So, I mean, it's going to get you noticed if you do it. And I would expect that if you're reckless driving, you'll get caught anyway. But it is a defense, for instance, that you're calling an emergency number. And this guy claimed he was, in fact, he had read the version that was here, and he was dressed in a suit, and he could well have been a lawyer defending himself, but actually said, well, Your Honor, I was making an emergency call. I mean, you go to traffic court, and whatever defense is available.
What's the fine regime you can use here?
I think that it was laid out in the Boston's, I think it was 100, 200, 300, I don't have it right in front of me, but it is graduated. I believe it was graduated. Is that the one I have it right in front of me. Why am I? Let's see.
$100, $200, $300.
Correct. Yeah, that's what it was.
Ted, you raised the point about reckless driving. I mean, isn't one way to deal with this to just say that there's a presumption that you're driving recklessly if you're using this? And because the technology evolves pretty fast, and it might be to some point, but what you're really concerned about is people not paying attention to what they're doing. And that's the, I guess the question is that sufficient in itself, or
I think, and what AAA will tell you is one of the real issues here is that the number of people at any one moment in time who are texting is enormous. They estimate that 6% of drivers are texting at any one particular time. It's about 800,000 people. It's not, I mean, I've heard, and I've on the blogs, and I've had people call me and email me as well, you know, shouldn't you outlaw people, you know, driving with their knees and eating pizza while they drive and getting dressed and shaving and all that sort of thing. The prevalence of all of those other sort of reckless habits and activities is nowhere near what the texting is. It's just a phenomenal rate.
Well, I understand what Lyle's point is, that if one other way of going about this is to change the definition of the crime to include a presumption if there is a use of a handheld.
I mean, that is a way of doing it.
I'm not saying it's a way. I'm just trying to think of how you would make this case to the legislature as a local option in a way, as opposed to a general law change. Whereas if you said that the envelope you're working inside is the existing envelope of violations, but you want a clarification that there's a presumption or that this conduct constitutes reckless driving, I would think that would maybe get you a little farther faster, but I don't know.
Virtually every state has a reckless driving statute.
Right.
And virtually every state that's adopted a ban has adopted a separate violation.
That's right.
It's sort of like seatbelts. Not wearing a seatbelt. I mean, that in a way is reckless driving. Yeah. But you wouldn't insert that into the reckless driving statute. Right. It has to be separate.
Okay. But now, can I follow up with a question? If you do want to deal with it separately, you and Jay, is this which? We're not the substantive committee, generally speaking. It's the public safety committee. It's your committee. Have you all considered the...
We haven't talked about this yet.
No, it's on the docket, and Jay's going to put it on. He wasn't ready because he wanted to talk to Peter first, because Peter Katusian's doing similar work.
Right. So the question is there a preference of the text about the text you want?
Well, yeah. I mean, that was. I mean, I'm hearing some suggestions here, and I think that the model I think is either law. The only distinction between the one that has been proposed by Representative Katusian, substantive difference. There are some differences on how they define like texting and emailing. Mm-hmm. I think emailing ought to be included because really it involves texting and receiving or sending emails, and I think the docket item refers to sending electronic messages, not just texting per se. But you know, we use the language from either one. The only substantive difference between the two, the special legislation Boston has proposed makes it a primary offense, whereas Representative Katugin's bill makes it a secondary offense. That is, you have to be stopped for a different violation and then found to have been.
But in the whole purpose of this to make it a primary, you're trying to.
Absolutely, I want it to be primary.
Okay. So if you do it primary, and if, the only suggestion I have is that what you're really talking about is the fact that people are not just using their hands, but they're taking their eyes off the road.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
I mean, at least with a cell phone, you're theoretically looking at the road while your ear is operating.
Oh, are you dialing?
Yeah, but your brain isn't working, unfortunately.
No, I'm not arguing the case. I mean, I'm just trying to make the point. So I guess, is the action from the committee, you want to wait until the Jay's committee takes a substantive action and then we come back to it?
I'm not sure which way we want to do it. I mean, part of my item was also asked for a public hearing in which to do this.
Do we need a public hearing on something of... It's a public safety issue. I mean, people, are they? We going to accept text testimony? I mean,
part of the reason I wanted to do that was to get AAA and the Safe Roads Alliance to come present their research and their studies.
But I guess the question is there? You normally do that for fact finding purposes.
Yeah.
If the facts are available to us and the committee is persuaded that this is a wise course of action that's been done in other places, and local option makes sense, do we?
Whatever floats your boat. I hear a lot lately that we need more public hearings. It's been suggested to me.
I guess the question is it advanced the discourse here? I guess this committee's been burned a bit, and so we're a little cautious about sending things out to the board without all sorts of conversation. But if it's a public safety issue, it's got lots of legislative support in various places. This is not a first of.
Erring on the side of God.
Recognize all the fishermen that all
I'll take your point. If it's a public safety issue, we ought to go to public safety and then come out as almost an emergency measure or something. But if it's coming out of here, it seems to me, both to get the information, on the record, as well as to give people, there's going to be people screaming, my daughter might even come up from New York. I think it's worthwhile doing it. Now, if it sets us back, that's something else. The other reason, which I still think is a useful one, is maybe to put both of them together, for the hearing issue, and see what that comes out to.
Madam Chair, if I can just make a procedural suggestion, because I know you had your hand up, but I think we have to hold it, and the reason for that is public safety's got to do its work and conduct the hearing, and then ultimately, to the extent there's going to be special legislation required, that's when we take our final action. So I don't think we need to be as directly involved with the public hearing, although we could do it jointly. That's not a big problem. But our role comes in on the special legislation side. That's when this committee has.
I think that's right.
Well, we've got the vice chair of public safety. Do you want to have a public? Can I ask you a question, Mr. Chair?
No, sure.
Can I ask a question? Do you want a public hearing?
I haven't talked with the chair yet. The other members, I'll get their sense of what they think. Personally, I would like to have a public hearing. I think that it would serve to make it an upfront issue, awareness throughout the city that this is something that, we're considering doing, and it's a serious issue. So I think it would certainly raise awareness. And as Ted said, if you bring in a couple of, expert witness type people, organizations, whatever, AAA or whoever else could come in, make a presentation at the beginning. It really, helps frame the issue a little bit, let people know how seriously we're considering this. So, but I'd defer momentarily till I talk to
Alderman Santangelo, then Alderman Banks.
The reason I asked that Alderman Esmahan and Alderman Harney, if this was ready to be discussed in committee, was because I wanted a scoping session, because I wanted to know, lay out all the issues, find out. Karen did advise me that public safety is the substantive committee, and Jay Ciccone did say that they were not ready to take it up at this time, and that's why he provided the state law. So that would be my recommendation in terms of that process. But I did want to bring this article out. So one of my concerns is not just texting or emailing, but you know, you can search the internet, you can search the web. And then I get this article from the Globe, which showed my Ford Touch, which is they're going to add a number of LCD screens on the car. It's going to be built in. But the third screen in the center console can be controlled by touch and will include an internet browser, which can be used when the car is within range of a Wi-Fi hotspot. The driver can also connect to cell phone and 3G data access and go online anywhere. But I just wanted to say one thing that they're building into it. Stress that the browser is automatically locked when the car is moving to prevent surfing while driving. So are some of the features of the GPS system. We limit the number of button pushes you can take before we say, that's enough, you need to focus on the driving. Which I thought was really cool.
Can I make a comment on that?
Yeah.
So I'm fortunate to have a GPS.
Mm-hmm. So my husband makes them.
So you can't do anything while you're driving.
Well, that's...
And that's, I think that's the point. You know, you can't do an enter address or any of that stuff.
Exactly, and a lot of people do that. And my
but
husband happens to be...
They can't do it.
They can't.
Right,
can't.
Under this, they can't, but a lot...
But I think it must be a law or must... That, you know, you, when you're at a stoplight or when you're, you know, at rest, you can do it. But once the car starts moving, nothing works. I mean, the woman who's telling you, you know, where to go works.
Once it's already programmed, you can do it, but you can't sit there and reprogram it.
Yeah, they won't. Right. The car's won't.
I mean, on the other hand, I can push buttons and I can tune in my FM or an AM or, you know, whatever
change
it is.
Change CDs.
Yeah, change CDs. Yeah. Well, no, CDs you can't do either when it's moving.
At the risk of prolonging the discussion, I have to report what I said at the beginning of the committee to a couple of people. It's the wonderful New Yorker cartoon that recently shows a traffic cop pulling over somebody, and he said, "Officer, I wasn't texting while driving. I was putting together a ship in a bottle." I'll see if I can find a cartoon.
And please do.
I suspect there's going to be a motion to hold. Who wants to make that motion?
Can I move it? I want to advise all of you guys on what the ramifications are if you vote to hold it. So just be aware.
Nothing will happen tonight. Thank you.
Does anyone want to substitute any in? No, motion to hold. Okay. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor of the motion. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 in favor, opposed, none. One member is not present to vote. So 5 vote is 7 in favor, none opposed, one member not present in voting. The item is held.
This is reckless voting.
One interesting thing that I noticed in the House bill was that it specifically makes a violation a non-surchargeable event.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which was kind of interesting. I'm not quite sure why the Senate bill was kind of silent, but the House bill specifically said this shall not be considered a conviction of a moving violation relating to surcharges. So
it is because they're wimps.
It's watered down. People are scared to death, and legislators apparently are among the worst abusers.
That's like adding the thing in the basket for,
I've decided that it's not going to try to be in some
Motion to adjourn?
Not yet.